This is episode number 52 with Alon Bijan.
Welcome to American Snippets, your source for inspirational, motivational, and selfless stories and interviews from exceptional people across the nation. And now, here's your hosts, Barb Allen and Dave Brown.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to the American Snippets podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. My name is Dave Brown. I'm a real estate investor, coach, and lifestyle entrepreneur, and the co-host here at the American Snippets podcast, along with my partner, Barbara Allen, who is a Gold Star wife, speaker, and author. And it's our mission and purpose to bring positivity, possibility, and patriotism to every single household across this country. Again, if you're a first-time listener, this podcast is a meaningful platform that encourages national pride, promotes the American dream, emphasizes the upshot of giving back, and supports all who honorably serve. And on this show, on our podcast, we offer entrepreneurial guidance, we offer principles on success, and resources and tools that you can apply in your own life. Every guest that we feature here, every story, every message that we talk about is a lesson, right? It's something that you can take and apply in your own life. And all we ask from you as a listener is to subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review. Let us know what you think about the show. Share this on social media. Tell a friend what we're doing here, and you know, help us make an impact and spread this message of positivity and possibility and patriotism across this country. Our guest today is an exceptional American. He is a film director and Emmy award-winning producer. His name is Alon Bijan. And his extensive professional credits include several projects with the legendary Chuck Norris. And his new film is called Flip Turn, which is based on the true story of a young autistic boy who becomes a swimming champion. Alon's American success story is made all the more remarkable by the fact that he is Iranian-born, and he came to this country all alone at the very young age of 15. Now he's an avid supporter of our military, a proponent of the American dream, and one of the proudest Americans we've ever had on the show. So listen in to Alon and Barbara Allen as Alon shares his story of being a teenager all alone in this country, having to learn the culture, a new language. He knows the value of hard work, and he worked relentlessly towards all his goals. And you'll also learn how he came to work with Chuck Norris as well. And also listen in as we talk about his new film and its potential to raise funds to support the autistic community. Now, without further ado, here is Barbara Allen with Alon Bijan.
Hi there. Welcome back to another episode of American Snippets. I am your co-host, Barb Allen. Once again, we talk all the time about the American dream and all the potential available to any of us in this country. We talk about people who live to their full potential in this country, in their own lives, and then turn around to help others get there. They do meaningful things on meaningful platform. Today's guest checks all of those boxes. I am so excited to have him here. I have the privilege of calling him my friend because he decides to slum it with me every now and then. But today here, we talked him into joining us on American Snippets. He is going to share with us his story of coming to this country from his homeland, which I'll let him share with you. As a young child, and what he discovered when he got here, the difference in lives between here and his home country, and everything he has been able to accomplish, including so much time he has chosen to dedicate his time and his services, his Emmy award-winning services, to the benefit of organizations like Snowball Express and Skyball, which I'm intimately involved in or was, and how he gives back to the military in that way. Alon Bijan. I always mess up his name. People call him Alan. People call him Al. And whatever. He answers because he's so nice. So thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure and honor to be at your presence.
Yeah, it is so cool. I got to meet you how many years ago at Snowball Express? Snowball Express is an organization which brings out families of the fallen to one central location each year for a few days before Christmas to do all sorts of great things. And that's where I met you. But how long ago was that?
Almost roughly. 10 years ago.
10 years?
Yeah, because this is my 11th year, actually. So I believe it's been about 10 years.
Yeah, but I think it took a couple of years for you to talk to me.
I'm going through that.
But that's all right. That's all right. We'll overlook that. So tell us about your company. There's so much to talk about first. You're a producer. You have your own company, Meteor World Studios, and you do really extraordinary things. You've met some amazing people, but let's start at the beginning because we want to emphasize, again, we talk about our community. We talk a lot about reminding each other what is so special about this country in light of everything that we all know what's wrong with this country. We all know that. There's no amount of shortage of opinions on that, but we like to remind people the opportunities available in this country, what you can do with your life if you truly apply yourself, that there are good-hearted, hardworking, successful people like you in this country who shine the light on that path for others and turn around to help them. So we're going to talk about all of that in your life, how it slides right in there. So can we start at the beginning? Tell us all where you were born.
Okay. I was born in Tehran, Iran, actually. Yeah. My mom's Persian. My dad is originally, he is from the country Georgia. His heritage. And I was, at age of 15, I told my parents that I want to move to United States. And they said, okay, actually.
I mean, just stop right there. I mean, I'm going to do this to you because I love when I talk to people who do such wild things and such huge things, and it's just normal to them because that's their life, right? But you're like, 15 years old, I was like, hey, mom, hey, dad, I'm going to go to America. And they said, okay, son, good luck. I mean, I have teenagers, right? And I'm like, where are you going? Who are you going to be with? What's, So the courage of you and your parents, we're going to stop and acknowledge that right there. Now you can move on.
I knew from, once I turned, I guess, to a teenager and I, discovered myself and I've always had a passion for filmmaking and camera and all that stuff since very young age, which my parents helped me out, by setting incentives for me. Hey, pass with good grades and we'll buy you a camera.
Awesome.
We'll buy you a projector. Because when I grew up, we didn't have all these video cameras and everything available. So it was an actual, a real film, a Super 8 millimeter camera. And I think my dad probably spent a whole month of salary just buying me one.
Aww.
They knew what I loved to do and I wanted to chase my dream and wanted to continue my education. And I just, for some reason, I knew I was belong here. And so they thought I'm going to go and just study and then come back. And I,
nope.
I remember when I told them, I said, once I leave, I'm not coming back. And they're like, sure, whatever.
He'll be back. Yeah.
My dad helped me out too. We applied for acceptance from a high school here in a city called Mesquite. It's a suburb of Dallas, Texas.
What made you pick that?
I was trying to. I think my dad had a friend that they were here, so they were able to go and ask. And so they accepted me as exchange student.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yeah, that way. So I was able to get a visa.
Okay.
And, I did it all legally.
It's what we love. We love to hear. Yeah.
So that's how I got visa. He gave me $1,200, bought my ticket. I got my bag, I got my camera, and came to United States. I flew here on my own. I didn't speak the language. I knew a few words.
Wow.
Started my life. But I can tell you a little story about how when I arrived here, what happened. And I remember when the airplane landed here, it was a snowy day in Dallas. It was night. It was 11 o'clock at night. And I was just telling myself, okay, now what?
Yeah.
My dad, before I leave, my dad taught me a few sentences in English that I memorized and practiced them. He says, when you get off the plane, ask for a taxi. I want a taxi. So I got a taxi. And another one, once I got into a taxi, the next line was, I want to go to Holiday Inn. So
I want to go to Holiday Inn.
That's what that's how I was speaking back then. And then I remember the taxi driver turned around and asked me which Holiday Inn.
Pick one.
I know that's what he was asking me, but I just repeated again, you know, that I want to go to holiday. And so he took me to the closest one, and I got a room. And the next morning, I got a taxi again, and went to a UTD and had an English language school. The next morning, and signed up to study the language and just learn it. That was step one. And there I met a couple of people that spoke my language, and they asked me, hey, when did you get here? And I said, last night. They said, do you have a place? I said, no. And they said, look, there's three of us. We have a full furnished 3-bedroom apartment, but one of them is leaving. So there's the room available. Are you interested? And I said, yes, of course. So the next night, I actually had a place, and, you know, went, got a few necessary things, and, started going to the language school, and we're talking about 40 years ago now.
So I was going to bring that up, because once again, I always like to do this and remind people, especially because a lot of the people who will listen have no concept of pre-cell phone, pre-internet time. So I want you to, anybody in that era just listening, I want you to imagine your cell phone dies, your internet crashes, and you're in another country with no phone, no internet. Say the internet in the whole country crashes, right? And you have to find your way by speaking to people, calling people, looking at maps and books. And it's an entirely different level of challenge that, and you just did it at 15 years old.
Yeah. And
so cool.
Thank you. So now, you know, now I'm 16, and I actually started working at a machine shop 3 weeks after I was here. Met someone who kind of saw, you know, noticed me as someone who probably needs help, or he needed help. So I started working in a machine shop, metal shop. And I saved my money, worked there for about 8 months so I can buy a car. And I was able to buy a car so I could get around. And then I went in and registered at the high school. You know, they were expecting me. And so I started the high school and you know, finished that, went to college. And, you know, and I continued working on the side, obviously, to support myself. Now, shortly after I came to the United States, there was the revolution in Iran, unfortunately, where these murderers took over, the mullahs took over and completely, you know, took the country back 1400 years. Immediately after that, Iran was attacked by Saddam in Iraq. And so they fought 8 years. So just everything there. Yeah. So it was a revolution. Then it was the war. You know, there was hardly any kind of communications and everything. You know, I continued with my life here, and, you know, took 18 years before I was able to see my family.
18 years. I mean, were you able to speak with them in that time frame? You could call them?
Once in a while, I was able to actually make a phone call. I would go, you know, to like a phone booth. We had phone booths back then.
Yes.
And called. I remember it was $4 a minute then.
Wow.
It was just to, you know, tell my parents, especially mom, hey, I'm okay. Everything's okay here. How are you? And that was it.
Wow.
Once a month, once every couple of months, just to make a communication, or I would send a letter and things like that. So it took a while for that part of the world to kind of settle down a little bit.
You're here trying to create your new life, and you're worried that your family is trapped all this going on.
Their stories, you know, that I heard was just amazing and horrible, and what they had to go through, you know, through the war and the revolution, both. You know, especially they lived in the south of Iran, southwest, which was closer to Iraq. So they got bombed a lot, and they had to be in shelters obviously there was like no food or anything. It destroyed a good portion of a lot of people's life, and 1 million people also from Iran that died in the war with Saddam.
Crazy. So I imagine they were at least then somewhat relieved that you were here. You know, to know that your child is at least safe.
Yeah, at least they knew that I was safe here, you know. And just I continued with my education and my work. I was in the first year of college when I started my business. Since I grew up with camera, I was able to get work and you know, support myself a little bit there and just work on the side, designs and stuff, for some printing companies, you know, through college and things like that. So until I finished, you know, college you know, by then my business was doing better and I was able to totally support myself.
Crazy. I mean, it's just, I always stop because, I mean, you think about all the things that we just go about and take for granted and how hard it is. You know, you look at, I have the four teenage boys now who are going to be going to college and launching on the world. They're easing onto that. And I know the challenges that they face and I worry about them. You know, it's a competitive job market. There's all these challenges. There's all this. But then you look at people, it's why I love sharing the stories, because you look at, you did all this. I mean, first you come here legally. The first thing you do is study a language and learn a language, find a job, find your way through and land in the area where you need to land. Just because you, like some voice inside you told you that this is where you belong and this is what you need to do. I mean,
yeah. And
you just, and you listened and you did it.
Yeah. And you see the opportunity. Obviously, you know, you can, to me, if once I decided to move here, I wanted to embrace the culture, the whole style of living and the language and everything. I was so thankful that I'm here. So I wanted to blend in. I felt that way inside anyway. And then during Shah's regime, when Shah of Iran, you know, existed, they were the best allied of United States. And right. And unfortunately, didn't get supported. And that was during the Carter time when completely he turned his back to Shah. And then, you know, all these mullahs came. That they've been ruling for 40 years now, and they've been killing everyone and stealing all the money, and it's a whole different story.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's the end of them now, because a lot's going on these days. But again, I wanted to belong here, so I did everything. I even remember in high school when in my government class, my teacher was telling everyone else, look at him, he just passed. And he's not even speaking the language as good as you guys, you know, and he just passed. What's wrong with you guys?
Oh, my God. And did you get beat up that day?
No, people were, you know, really, you know, really okay, good. And, you know, I had a lot of friends and still see me. I had a couple of friends that they approached me and became friends. They kind of took me under their wing and they taught me, you know, things and took me around, and they were wonderful, you know, actually to girls that were friends. And I was still in touch, and then now they're like so proud of me, and they see from the guy who said that didn't speak English, and now, you know, like I have an Emmy, you know, kind of like the whole American dream, basically.
Yes, I love that you said that. Yes, perfect.
it's wonderful. Obviously it wasn't as easy and as fast as that I explained it being right here. You know, I had my challenges, but, I stayed focused on it and I knew, what my goal was. You know, for a teenager, for anyone young, it's very easy to go to the wrong path because it's a lot more attractive, especially if you don't have no one to tell you what's right, what's wrong. Right. So I was on my own. Even in high school, I didn't even have a guardian or anything, you know, or obviously no. So I remember one time I was sick, so I couldn't go to school. And when I was called in and they asked me how come my parents didn't call, you know, I said, well, I don't have anyone here, so there's nobody to call. And you know, the principal knew about it, but assistant principal still could not accept it and says, nope, they still have to call no matter what. So then I got nice. A friend to call. He was older and he would just call and say, you know, it was okay.
Oh my goodness. I wonder how that would be addressed now. I feel like that would be different now, you know, but if there was a 15-year-old here and without someone, I don't know, is that even permitted now with the schools?
Well, it wasn't to have your own apartment wasn't permitted. Right. I had my own apartment, even in high school, but I had to do what I had to do.
That is wild. When I was I was 17 and I spent a year away as an exchange student. And in the middle of that time, I took a train from Denmark to Belgium, also with no phone or anything like that, like no internet. I thought that was kind of badass. It's the middle of the night. I'm in Germany and nobody speaks Danish or English. And I didn't know what train to get on. And I picked one that said Paris because I knew somebody in Paris. I figured if I wind up in Paris, I'll go. And that to me was a pretty wild kind of crazy thing to do. Right. But when I put it up next to your story, I knew I had people on the other end that were there helping me and do that all the way. So I'm just trying to wrap my mind and put it in perspective of you being this age person and going out there and doing that on your own. And I keep harping on these points because we always want to harp on the fact that you got to just go for it and take those chances and follow that voice inside of you and know that there's going to be struggles. It's going to be hard. You're going to have times where you're homesick or you're sad or you doubt it, right? And you just, what do? You burned your bridges behind you. You couldn't go back. You had to stay.
I couldn't go back and I didn't want to go back.
Right. But do you think that makes a difference then? Do you think knowing that you couldn't go back helped you mentally drive forward? Because there was no, that wasn't even an option. You know, when people get tired or they want to quit, they know they can quit. They can stop working out. They can have that cake. They can stay at the same shitty job, right? But that wasn't an option for you. So do you think that helped drive you forward?
That wasn't what was driving me forward, honestly. Even if the country was still in a good shape, I still wouldn't have gone back because I was home. To me, I was home, you know. Yeah. And look, I had my challenges. I ran into people helped me out, and I had people that were totally against me just because I came from another, part of the world. So I faced both. But I knew, even those people were, for the first time, I couldn't understand why. And I had one of, some of the teachers even in high school where they're mean to me and going, well, why are you here? And that kind of stuff. And I had some other teachers were extremely good to me and understanding and helped me out. They knew my situation. But even when I faced that, I knew that I'm in their home, I'm in their land. So, I need to be accepted. It wasn't like I wasn't expecting them to just love me just because I came over here, you know. Right. So I wanted to make sure I be the kind of person that they allow here and they be happy to have here. Yeah. And
good point. Those are good points. Yeah.
So it didn't really bother me because, again, I felt like, well, I'm the one who came here and I can't just expect. And I have met so many wonderful people along the way. And look, as a person, you're going to see good people, bad people, no matter what part of the world you're in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can't just call everyone, names and say, well, they were racist or this and that. No, I probably would have questioned someone as well, too, personally, if I was in their position. But, I look at their character to see who they are first before anything else. One of the reasons I'm just so supportive of, United States and still so obviously so in love with it, is just because of all the opportunities that was given to me and you couldn't ask for, a better place. And I've traveled throughout the whole world now. And I still come back and kiss the ground.
Yeah. Good to know. So you mentioned something we need to go back to. You have an Emmy. And you weren't just handed that because you got here. So this 15-year-old boy has his dream, has his vision, leaves his homeland and his family behind, comes to another country, learns the language, gets a job, goes to school, finds the career path he wants, sticks to it, and now has a freaking Emmy. So talk about that. How did that come about? What was the Emmy for? And what's the nomination process? How do you do on that? And how did you find out you got an Emmy?
The Emmy that I got was for, it was like a documentary, but it was a behind the scene thing, like a making of. It was a making of for a film, for a short film. It was about two young guys that were in college and in film, you know, film college. And then they made a short film, but the visual effects in it, just as good as Hollywood effects that they did it on their computers, you know, in their living room. And so it was like a story on them. And, you know, that I shot. So the producers of that they wanted to enter in Emmy. They thought, hey, this is good. We feel like we have a chance. And I thought, okay, when they told me, I said, sure, but look, I've done much bigger stuff than that, you know. So anyway, it got nominated. And when I got nominated, I didn't even tell anybody. But then I won, which has been wonderful. And someone actually told me, says, look, you know, you won this for everything you've done so far. Look at it that way, you know. So it's like you've been noticed for your work, not necessarily just for that. I'm proud of it, and it has made obviously impact also in my career as well. And you know, you try to always live up to the expectations.
It's a great credential to have, and it is something. It sets the bar high, because once you win that, I mean, you can't go back from that. You can't slide, right? And that can't be your single accomplishment. You know, there's always more to do after that, so it pushes you again even further. Like, all right, I got an Emmy. Check. Like, what now? I'm like, what's, you know, what's next? Oh, wait, I know what's next. I'm going to make friends with Chuck freaking Norris, and I'm going to hang out with him. How did that happen?
I met Chuck actually one time at a restaurant, and I just like did my first film, and he was in Dallas, just did the pilot for Walker, Texas Ranger.
Okay.
So, and I just made this small, you know, small budget film with no one famous in it. And, you know, sat next to him and talked, kind of told him, you know.
So you see Chuck Norris in a restaurant and you sit down next to him and start talking about.
Actually, the manager of the restaurant knew me. And so when I went there, he says, hey, Chuck Norris is here.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to introduce you to him. So he introduced me, and he was very nice and gracious. And, you know, so we sat and talked, you know, so I'm talking about my film that I just, you know, it's a little film, and he's talking about the Walker pilot that they did. Yeah. And so that was the first time that I met him. And then obviously, you know, Walker took off, you know, I was able to actually sell that little film that I did to HBO, which that took me one notch, you know, and got me closer to my
goal. Yeah, awesome. Also no small feat to get that done. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I was able to do some work on Walker as well too, and you know, and I had my studio on the side, was doing my stuff, you know, did several videos for Chuck Norris, did like a documentary on a foundation that he has for years, which George Bush Senior actually helped him get it off the ground. It's called Kickstart, and it teaches the inner city kids in martial arts. So, you know, they learn respect and discipline and things like that. It's a wonderful.
That's awesome. I didn't know that about Chuck Norris, so that's pretty cool. I'm making a note because, you know, follow up on that one. But awesome.
So then his son was introduced to me actually from somebody else. And wanted to do a film, and they brought me into producing and direct it, called Bells of Innocence. And so I did that. That was and Chuck also played in it. You know, that went well. Then the producer, you know, wanted me to produce another film, And just kind of like, you know, relationship got better, and he's such a nice person and a good man. You know, so, you know, we did a lot of work together, a lot of different projects. Also did a sport TV show on kickboxing called World Combat League that Versus picked it up. He told me about the idea, and I did a sizzle reel on it, put it out there, and got picked up. That's how that one went.
Awesome.
So it's a relationship. And he even just this last Thanksgiving, he invited me to his house. He lives in a ranch.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, it was, you know, his family, immediate family, and me. So it was just wonderful to have him.
I know, and I told you I forgive you for not having Chuck Norris on my voicemail saying Happy Thanksgiving. You know, Monsoon, who we talk about a lot, American Snippets, William Mimiaga, our favorite Marine. It happened to be my birthday weekend one time, and he was at an event with Sean Connery, and he posted a picture of himself with Sean Connery. I'm like, Monsoon, what the hell? Where is my birthday call? And I'm totally kidding, right? 5 minutes later, my phone rings, or I get a text from Monsoon, don't answer your phone. And it's Sean Connery, which I still have the voicemail now, saying, you know, happy birthday, you know, I'm going to go have another drink or whatever. And it's so funny. So, yeah, you get a pass this time. But next time you have Thanksgiving with Chuck Norris, I expect a voicemail from Chuck Norris saying happy Thanksgiving.
Make sure that happens.
But more importantly, I like to mess around with what I do. I have a short attention span, I think. But more importantly, here's another thing that you touched on. And so it can be very tempting when you run into somebody or you're past cross with somebody who maybe you look up to or you feel could be a good connection or could do this, right? What do you think would have happened if you walked in and said, oh my gosh, Chuck Norris, thank you. I'm so glad to meet you. Do you think you could help me with my film? Or do you think, right? That's not how it goes. What is the importance of just of remembering that no matter who the person is, they're a person, right? And they have huge demands on their time.
Right.
And you have to add value to somebody's life. You can't just go and say, hey, Mr. You know, rock star or celebrity, why don't you help me? You know,
it's so important
to build a relationship and just appreciate people for being people first.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was, I didn't ask him for help when I met him. It was just, you know, just meeting him. I mean, I grew up watching his movies.
Right.
So to be able to just meet him was fantastic. And then, you know, a few years later, being able to direct Chuck Norris, you know, was just a dream.
I mean, come on, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how much more American can you get, right?
I know. So here's this kid from Iran who grows up, and now he's telling Chuck Norris what to do. I freaking love it.
Right, yeah.
Hey, Chuck, no, that was not okay. No, yeah. Fix it. No. You want to kick my ass? I'm going to kick your ass. You fix it. It's so great. I love it.
Yeah, no, I directed Chuck Norris and I didn't get kicked in my face.
That's awesome. That's a good t-shirt.
Yeah.
Give me the t-shirt or the coffee mug. So, all right, we can move on from Chuck Norris because I know it's old, but I just think it's a super fun story. Now, you are working on something that you are as excited about. You're working on your own film, Flip Turn?
Yes. The new project is a family film, a very heartwarming family film called Flip Turn, which is a swimming term. It's a story of a autistic teenage boy who becomes a swimming champion. And it's, what is it like, you know, defiled odds and just the underdog, kind of a Karate Kid sort of,
Karate Kid.
Make you feel good and you know, going through challenges and triumph. It is a fantastic film, fantastic story that right now we've been casting and we're in a pre-production, so pulling all the elements together to start filming hopefully end of August.
How exciting is that?
It's very exciting.
It's a whole adventure.
It is. I love what I do. I'm so lucky. I feel so fortunate, honest to God. Like, it's a dream. I'm still living my dream. I mean, that's what puts a smile on my face.
Yeah.
I thank God every day, you know, that God, thank you, God, for like giving me the health and giving me the mind and giving me the good people around me and giving me the opportunity that I can do what I'm doing. I mean, what I love to do. No matter how hard I've worked, I don't know that I'm working hard. I'm not tired.
Yeah, because you love everything, what you're doing. And that, I can tell you, is true. Every time I've seen you over the years, even if there's something stressful going on in your life, which, you know, there has been in some occasions, you're still have a smile on your face and you're still like, well, you know, this is going on and this is stressing me out, but look at all these other amazing things I have going on. And I think that's something I really love and appreciate about you, that you have that mindset and you constantly like snap yourself around and then you just walk around. I mean, you're at these events, you and Bob Vincent are working forever, all hours of the clock, right? And you're dragging the camera, holding this, weaving in and out, but you're still like, hey, what's up? And you got a smile for everyone. It's so cool.
Sure.
And what that does, the energy you put out, I think is what you're getting back.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Because I'm happy to be there.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be like among all those families and or other events where I have other veterans, and because I have learned a lot. Honestly, I've grown a lot during that 10 years that I've met these wonderful people and veterans and their families. And even when I talk to some of the wounded soldiers and, you know, seeing them and asking them, like, how do you deal with that? And when they tell me, like, hey, it's not about what I lost, it's what I have now.
Yeah.
And that just, like, totally, you know, like a light bulb in my head. And I was like, you know, look at how they're looking at things.
Yes.
And look at, you know, look how much we have and we're not seeing it. So, so it just opened up my eyes to a lot of stuff. And I've you know, learned and from their strength and, you know, become a stronger person and stay positive. You know, and again, always stay focused on what you're doing and keep your faith.
Yeah. And that is another important point. It is the people that you come into contact with and the people you choose to listen to and the messages you choose to listen to. When you're surrounded by people who have that mindset, who are constantly saying, like, yes, oh, you know, I lost this arm. I lost my buddy. I lost my husband. I lost something, you know, terrible has happened. But look at everything I have and look at what I'm doing. It can't help but seep into you when you're constantly exposed to a message that is repeating itself, that message is going to seep into you. But if you surround yourself with the opposite message of people, you know, who insist on staying down, want to stay down and tell you, you can't do this, you can't do it. Whatever message you surround yourself with is what's going to seep into you.
And exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, you make it a point to surround yourself with people who have the message that you need to hear and want to hear. And then you're sending that message back out too. Because I know a lot of people who bump into you, like, there's nothing, he's smiling again. You know, so it works and people notice it.
It really does. Barbara. And I try to inspire young people that I meet, from the ones that they come work for me or I meet them anywhere. And I try to tell them about all the opportunities they have here, but they don't know. See, they're born here.
Mm-hmm.
They have no clue what they have here.
Right.
I believe every person in high school should be part of the high school, that they should travel, especially to overseas country, to like third world countries.
Yeah.
And spend
at
least a month there.
Right.
And, you know, obviously supervise and everything, but just so they can see what they have.
Yeah.
They can see how others live. And it's going to make a big difference to a lot of them.
Sure.
Just so they know what they have. And so when someone tells them they're a victim, they need to know, no, they're not a victim. No one's a victim. You can make yourself a victim.
Right.
And that's a great excuse for you to just sit back, go, well, I'm never going to be nothing because I'm a victim.
Right.
I'm done.
Right.
You know, give it to me. No, you're not a victim. If I can do it here, if I can come here without knowing the language, having anybody around me and make it, then honestly, it's so much easier for the person who's born here. You know what I'm saying? You know,
no
matter what part of the country, what neighborhood they're born in or anything like that, it's there for you. You just got to go get it.
Yep, exactly. And you have a young daughter. How old is she?
She's 12 now, about to be 13 now.
She's 12. Yeah. And so, I mean, does she get to come to work with you? And I'm sure you instill this message in her too.
Right? Oh,
She's got to see what you're doing and she's got to love it and, you know, be excited by it.
Yes, she's very excited. She, you know, grew up obviously coming on the set and seeing, and you know, so she actually made at like age of 10, she made one short film.
Love it.
That won festival. She made the second one at age of 11, again won.
What? And, that's awesome.
You know, she writes the story herself and she directs it. I just shoot it for her. She basically tells me what to shoot, and she, you know, It's so much fun.
That's not just listening
to her, because I want it to be her thing.
Yeah.
And again, I'm blessed to have her in my life. She's a wonderful, wonderful person. She understands. I started bringing her to the Snowball Express. I think the first time she was five, and the first time mm-hmm. that I brought her in, you know, and just expose her to everything. She knows what it is. Just the last Skyball, she was with me as we walk around, and so many people approached me and said hi to me, and almost everyone turned around to her and says, "Hey, your dad is a great guy. He's cool. He's, you know, we're proud of him and this stuff."
That's awesome.
So she felt so good, and she mentioned it later to me. She goes, "Dad, you're so loved. Everyone just said, aww, you know, it made me feel really good that I have a dad like you." And that was like
priceless. Priceless. And I know that's not why you do what you do. You've donated probably hundreds and hundreds of hours. If you stack them all up, like months and months on end of time and services you've donated to the organizations I know, Snowball Express and Skyball, which is the American Airlines Air Power Foundation event to raise money for organizations that support military families, right? And you are there with Bob Vinson a lot, the two of you. But what do you do for them? And how did that happen? How did you get involved in that? And why do you choose to continue donating your time? You know, the time is money, and there's one thing to donate an hour or two or whatever, but I mean, you're all in. You donate a lot of time.
Well, compared to what they've done, their sacrifice for me and all the other Americans, that's nothing. A few hours or hundreds of hours or thousands of hours is nothing compared to that. What they've gone through, what they've done, it's peanuts what I do. Like, I wish I could do more. And I mean, that's how I can give a little compared to what they've done, just to say thank you and just to hopefully help it continue.
Yeah.
You know, continue what they're doing. So I'm honored to do it. Like, I don't really look at it as, you know, hundreds of hours or thousands of hours. It's nothing. Again, just nothing. I'm having fun with it. I'm learning from it too. I'm happy to be with them. You know, I remember one time, we were getting a helicopter ride, and I had four Marines with me, you know, wounded Marines. And I mean, you know, when we started flying above Vegas, they were getting a tour, and I was, you know, covering it, getting some footage and stuff. You know, I mean, I look and I go, look at me, you know, I'm in a helicopter.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm so fortunate. Yeah. It's just like, it helps me.
What an awesome moment.
Continue.
Right.
The way I got introduced to it, Bob Vinson, a very good friend of mine, who's been involved with this thing for many, many years himself, he told me about Snowball Express. And so I went out there, you know, to help him out and shoot some stuff. And I just fell in love with it. And I was hooked. After that, I was back every year and every event that involved veterans, and somehow was it giving back to them, from Skyball to salute soldiers and everything else. However I could, you know, I was there.
Awesome. So we're going to get to our last few questions that we like to ask here in a minute, but I want to circle back because we touched on it and then we moved on. I probably got distracted. Your movie again, Flip Turn. I really want to talk about this because you're in your beginning stages, but you're also raising capital for it.
And yes,
you have efforts made because every film takes funding. Yeah. You know, there's a lot to pay for. And you had mentioned that part of what your interest in this is raising awareness for autism and what people with autism and their families may face and the beauties of it and the struggles of it. But if there was an organization that was dedicated to these families and to autism awareness, and they were interested in reaching out to you to somehow get involved or participate in this, would you be interested in that?
I'd be very interested in it. Definitely. Okay. Definitely. Yeah. Like you said, making a film, especially if you're trying to do a quality film, you know, it's very expensive. Even though I own, you know, the facility, cameras, lights, and everything, but still a lot of people involved, such as the crew, actors, you know, the food, locations, and things like that. There's so many things, you know, from the sound to music to all the elements involved with the film. You know, it just takes money to do it. Takes money to do a good film. So, yes, we're still raising capitals. We've got about half of it, and we still need more. So we're open to from donations or anyone wants to come in and become a co-producer on the film and help out in any way they could bring funding to it.
Awesome. Or what if there were – and I always get my brain going quicker sometimes, and it shouldn't come out of my mouth, but it's going to, right? So – but, like, what if there were students – with autism, right, who wanted to be extras, like if you have a scene of a swim event, right? What if people could sponsor a student to be an extra in that, and you could have a whole audience of children with autism, you know, as part of that? I don't know if that would work or be feasible, but there's so many creative ways you can go about doing that, and including the community, you know, with autism in it, to really just build and just be this epic moment.
Yes, because there's a lot of new discoveries about autism and everything. So it's good to shine a light on it,
right?
And show kind of a different side that, like, hey, they can achieve things as well, and so that stereotype thing go away. And because a lot of people don't really know about it,
right?
You know, they've heard the word, but they're not really educated. So we're just trying to raise awareness with a film, which is based, you know, on a true story. There's actually autistic kids that they swim, and so if you know, talking about bringing, you know, some of them or anything like that, yes, that's fantastic. And we're going to have some of them actually come out from the swimming. One of the locations that we're booking, they actually mentioned that There is a team of autistic, you know, kids.
I'm genius.
Of course you are.
Perfect.
I mean, we could use any type of help or any kind of support. It's fantastic. It, you know, it could be companies, or it could be a restaurant that says, hey, we'll provide the food for a couple of days for yourself. You know, you guys are shooting for a whole month. Or any kind of donations, anything helps. Anything just keeps the project go forward. Again, these are independent films, and so we're not working with Hollywood budgets. We're, you know, but we do put out quality work.
Yeah, and because you can then choose the content of that film, and it's an important story to get out. You know, I think it'll do great things for the community. People with autism and their families. So I think it'll be great. If somebody wanted to get involved, wanted to get more information, or wanted to send information to somebody else, where can they go for information? Is there anywhere out there yet?
I can give you my website, and I can give you my email. Also, they could contact me, and I'll be glad to contact them. I can give you phone number, everything. My website is makingfilms.com.
Okay.
That's makingfilms.com. SNN, makingfilms.com. My email is kingbijan@yahoo.com, which is KingBijan@yahoo.com.
Perfect. So, and we'll put links to these in the article that we're going to put out, and we'll do regular updates, and we'll put it out on our Facebook page and Instagram and our community. And we'll see if we can't get our community involved in this, right? Someone out there is going to want to get involved, and you'll keep us notified as your film progresses.
Of course, of course.
And let us know. And then we'll get you to come to New York and do a screening.
That's right.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. So our last round of questions here. We talk a lot about the American Dream, and you've talked a lot about the American Dream. But I'm going to ask you to kind of sum it up a little more. If somebody says, hey, what does the American Dream to you mean to you? Your answer would be?
Is chasing your dream and be successful at it. And but putting the effort in it, if you're willing to put the effort in it, the opportunity is there. It's the physics law. It cannot go to waste. If you put it in there, somehow it will pay off. And I'm an example of it, and I was an underdog. And so the American dream exists, and I think we're the only country who have that. Yeah, and a lot of young people don't know, and unfortunately the rhetoric's out there, somehow it's like they make it cool for these young people not to like the country. And that's so wrong. That is so wrong. I think what the mistake they're making a mistake between the ruling parties and their land.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So if you don't like the ruling parties, hey, you can vote, okay? Get involved and vote if you don't like it. But you gotta love your land. You know, that is different, you know, yes. Because it's gonna change every 4 to 8 years, it's gonna change. You know, mm-hmm. So love your land first and then do something about it if you don't like it. Don't just sit back and go, well, I don't like it, I hate it, this and that, because you think you're cool.
Yeah. Good, perfect. Now, if you could reach back all those years to when you were 22 years old, something you wish you'd known then that you know now, what would you reach back in time and say to yourself, hey, heads up?
Oh, God. You know, with...
PG, or PG-13, or just go for it.
So with age comes wisdom.
Yes.
You know, so... So I learned to maybe be a little bit more patient. Obviously we're all in our life. I wish every decision we made was the right decision. I don't have anything that I'm regretting, you know.
Good.
I'm not regretting anything, but again, I've matured obviously throughout all these years.
Yeah.
Since my college time, I've been involved in pushing for my career, and at the same time, I try to give back and be an example as well too, and just treat people the same way I want to be treated.
Perfect. So if you could pick up your phone today and call someone, anybody in the whole world who's still alive, and spend the rest of the day with, hang out and talk and get to know, who you have not met yet, who would it be?
Oh, have not met yet?
Yep.
I will call probably Trump.
Okay, good one. What would you say to him? Or what would you want to talk about?
You know, I would support him. You know, I would thank him for what he's done in his mission, and I would just tell him to just kind of stay strong, and not let all these rhetorics and all this stuff get to him. That's probably what I would do. And again, look, I'm an immigrant. Okay,
yes.
So. One of the things that unfortunately some people, you know, maybe hate about him is this whole immigration stuff.
Right.
And he's not saying no one should come here. He's just saying they need to be better out. They need to – the good people come over. And there's nothing wrong with that. Everyone locks their door at night, okay, mm-hmm. or during the day. And why can't we – I mean, the borders are the doors to our homes.
Right.
So I don't understand what's the big deal about it, or it's just an excuse. Again, I'm not. This is not about parties right and left whatsoever,
right.
Because I'm pretty a middle type of person anyway. I mean, I'm in entertainment business, so I have ideas that are conservative, and I have ideas that may be liberal. So I, you know, there's things that I like on both. So I'm pretty much center. When it comes to stuff like this, but things that he says, I agree with. I mean, he wants just a better country, and he just wants you to love your country and make it better. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Perfect. Well, we'll tag him in this, and maybe you're following. Thank you so much for taking the time. For all you do. That's how I got to know you, and B, for sitting down with us here today, being a part of American Snippets, which is my baby. and I love so much. So, you know, we're very selective about the people we let in into our worlds to be part of our babies, you know. So thank you for being among that group.
Thank you, Barbara. I am honored. Thank you so much. This was fantastic. And thank you for doing this. You know, We need more people like you. We really do. We need more people that are, you know, patriots and also put the message out. And God bless you. And I hope you're successful at everything that you do.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Well, like you said, you got to love the land first, right? So that's what we're doing here. That's exactly what we're doing. We're just reminding people, politics aside, you know, patriotism is not about politics. You know, everybody has a choice into how much they love this country and how much they're going to do to make it the country they want it to be. So this is our part in doing our vision, how we see it. And we love that you're a part of it. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be part of it. And I'll just say a quick story again, from someone like me that's here, and I was able to be at President Bush Sr.'s house, get on his boat, have just conversation, you know, and he drove me in his golf cart. And again, it's one of those moments when I go, the president is driving me around.
In a golf cart with the president?
In a golf cart. It's just me. And
I did not know that. We're going to have you back. To say how that one happened.
That's you know, it's all part of the thing. I got to play a fake guitar with AC/DC on stage in a concert.
What? All right, we're part two. Everybody stick around because we're gonna have this guy back because he's got way more stories that we didn't even touch on. He's been holding out on us. So pencil that in. 2019, you'll be back and you'll give us an update. Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Barbara.
All right, there wraps up another episode of American Snippets. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. Would like to personally thank Alain Bijan for joining us as well. If you want to follow Alain Bijan on social media, please do so at Instagram. You can do that at instagram.com/ Alain Bijan. So it's AlainBijan. And if you enjoyed his story and you want to learn more about Alain, head on over to AmericanSnippets.com/052. You can read the full write-up that Barbara did on Alain and his story, watch the full interview that we did with Alain, and get some other social media links and things that you can use to follow him and engage with everything that he's doing. Again, if you got value out of today's episode, please leave us a review. Let us know what you thought. Share this on social media at American Snippets. Make sure you tag us. And we will see you on the next episode. Remember, don't just be inspired by our guests, but let their stories ignite you into action in your own life. Now go out there and show the world how exceptional you truly are. We'll see you next time.